Progressive Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. Tonight, my subject is disinformation on the Internet, a very broad subject that will take more than one program. Before I begin, I want to remind you again of Rodney Martin's Third Reich Film Festival in Orange, California on February 19th. If you live in that area, contact Rodney at rodneymartin.com about particulars. Two films will be shown, plus some newsreels and short subjects, and snacks and appetizers will be served, all for free. I don't know how he does that, but he seems to be doing it. So let us begin. The object of disinformation is less to convince anyone of the false than it is to create a set of conditions under which everything can be believed, but nothing can be known. This was written by James Fetzer, who is a philosopher of science and has a radio program in which he actually has many guests who are either disinformation specialists or misinformation specialists. Now, he distinguishes between these two things. So he says further, quote, disinformation should be viewed more or less on a par with acts of lying. Indeed, the parallel with lying appears to be fairly precise, unquote. Now, misinformation, Fetzer defines as false, mistaken, or misleading information, and disinformation is misinformation propounded in an intentional, deliberate, or purposeful effort to mislead, deceive, or confuse. I would go along with that. I don't know who wouldn't. To put it in my own words, misinformation is false or inaccurate information that is spread unintentionally, or other words, out of ignorance or stupidity. It is distinguished from disinformation by motive, in that misinformation is simply erroneous, while disinformation, in contrast, is intended to mislead. It is my belief that the powers that be want the questioning public to get involved in conspiracy ideas. This is a new thought that came to me when I was remembering about George W. Bush, when he made that public statement right after 9/11, and he said, and it's been televised, it's been on videos over and over again, he said something like, don't be misled by conspiracy theories. Now, and then he went and sat down, and everybody was left, what does he mean by that? And, of course, why would he say such a thing? Did he say it because he really wanted to keep people away from conspiracy theories? Of course, his saying that did just the opposite. So they knew that, and he said it to drive the awake questioning people, toward conspiracy theories, because they already had people set up out there to lead them and to lead the conspiracy theories about 9/11. Some of these people at that time were Michael Rupert, Webster Tarpley, Eric Hufschmid, and Alex Jones. That's my opinion. Now, I've made up a list of the most obvious and most dangerous of these characters operating right now, starting with the most obvious to the least obvious, at least what I think are least obvious to most people. I have 9 names, and they might surprise you, and for some people, these names might upset you about me, but they are: 1, Alex Jones; 2, Jim Mars; 3, Webster Tarpley; 4, Henry Mackow; 5, David Icke; 6, Daryl Bradford Smith, along with two of his very frequent radio guests, Muhammad Rafiq and David Pidcock; and 7, Gordon Duff; 8, Alan Hart; 9. Wayne Mattson. A topic or theme that continually runs underneath or along with their main interest of these 9 people that I named is globalism, New World Order, Israel, and Zionism. But underneath that, or along with it, they so often bring up Adolf Hitler. The many others who talk about this may be misinformation people because they don't know or they actually believe it. I'm talking tonight about disinformation. So the common things that are said about Hitler are, again, I've numbered them. 1, Hitler was a Zionist. And the fact is that Pat Buchanan in Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War states categorically that Churchill was a dedicated Zionist. So in that case, Churchill and Hitler, who were enemies and hated each other, were both Zionists, but that fits in with this theory that so many have, that everyone who's running anything is a Zionist. So naturally, okay, Adolf Hitler was a Zionist. 2, Hitler was a Jew. 3, Hitler was a Rothschild, meaning his grandfather was a Rothschild. 4, Hitler was an occultist. 5, Hitler was funded by Jewish bankers. 6, Hitler was funded by Zionists. 7, Hitler was a tool of the Illuminati. 8, Hitler was a British agent. 9, Hitler was funded by the Bush family. 10, Hitler escaped the bunker at the end of the war and went to South America. 11, Hitler escaped the bunker and went to the Arctic. And 12, pretty far-fetched, with which not all of my named people would go along with, but some people, this is part of the craziness. Hitler is still alive via Tesla Energy Technology along with Martin Bormann and Dr. Mengele. That's at the far, far end of this Hitler business. Now, I've asked these things of myself and come up with my answers. What is the goal of all this disinformation? Well, clearly, it's to keep any Hitler reanalysis or rehabilitation from occurring. Now, how do I know that that is the goal? Because, as you can see, all of these promotions are done by bloggers and internet writers and radio hosts in the alternative truth movement. It is only the folks open to alternative political outlook that would be at all interested in looking into alternative views of Adolf Hitler. So this is where they go to work. They don't go to work in the mainstream because that's already convinced of it there. They go to work disinformation in the alternative truth movement. Who among alternative truth seekers is most susceptible, I asked myself, to this Hitler Zionist conspiracy talk? Well, my answer to this, and there's many exceptions to this, but overall I would say one group that's very susceptible is extreme branches of Christianity and those who believe in that. Why? Because they're prone to take things on faith and to be convinced by Bible verses that can be applied in just about any way. And, you know, I just say they are believers, not critical questioners. They look critically as far as if it fits with their religious beliefs. That's where they're critical. But once they can fit something in their religious belief, then they accept it without, and they even are quite possessive of it. So they're not as actively involved in educating themselves once they're satisfied that it fits their religious beliefs. And they don't like Hitler already because they see him as anti-Christian and persecuting the church. And this is promoted a lot. So this makes them already audience for this disinformation. Now, we talked about who the disinformation is directed at, and we talked to people, I mentioned some people who are purveying it, but who is behind this disinformation? And again, my answer is clearly those ones who are threatened by a Hitler rehabilitation or a changed perception in any way of Adolf Hitler. 1, all Jews. I've got 4 listed here. 1, all Jews, but especially the leading world Jewish organizations that profit from fear of Hitler or another Hitler, such as Ahmadinejad, Saddam, 2 examples. There are others. When they point to these people as being another Hitler or a new Hitler, well, there has to be a first Hitler. And so the first Hitler has to remain as is, and we can't see him as not so bad. When you point to these other people, what are you going to say about them? Now, number two, the Holocaust industry, which includes the above-mentioned Jews, but also there are other groups very involved and very interested in keeping the Holocaust industry alive. Some of these are the Poles, the Czechs, the Russians. This is important. And another group would be the Gypsies or the Roma, all people who benefit from the ongoingness of the Holocaust and the camps and everything that that helps their story to hang together. Now, number three, the Allied governments of World War II. The United States, Great Britain, France, Russia, and their armed forces. Think of the bombing of civilians carried out by the United States and the British Royal Air Forces. Just that, millions of innocents were murdered. And they need to protect themselves from being charged with war crimes and genocide. And they also need to protect their reputation as being the defenders of democracy, and therefore the evil that they conquered has to be far greater than their own evil. And then the fourth one is Israel, simply to justify its existence. Now, if these are the ones who benefit from the disinformation campaign, wouldn't they be the one who hire and place the disinformation on the internet? So now, what don't these nine people I've named do? One, they don't criticize Jews as Jews. Some of them praise Jews. Two, they don't call for the end of Israel. Not one of them, I don't think, says Israel should actually be abolished because it's illegitimate, although some at the bottom of the list are coming closer to it. And it may be that some have made some noises like that. But basically, they don't like to say that. They call for peace. They are against war. This is what they do. They present themselves as peaceniks. They're against war. They're against everything awful and bad. They blame Israel for fomenting war. But at the same time, they hold up this dream vision of everyone living in the world together in peace, just out of the goodness of their heart. You know, when we get rid of the Zionists, they say, when we get rid of all these evil warmongers, when we get rid of corporations, we get rid of this and that, and all rich people, all the people of the world are going to live together in peace, and we're all going to get along. Well, this is actually an internationalist idea. It's not a nationalist idea. And it's also an impossible dream, and that's why they hold it up as their goal, because it's impossible. It's something that people can always be striving for, but you will never get there. And to think that everybody will somehow join together in peace is internationalist. And there is a big distinction that needs to be made, not between left and right, but between nationalists and internationalists. I'm not the only one who says this, but there aren't too many. But I've believed this for some time. This is the real distinction politically between groups, whether you're a nationalist or whether you're an internationalist. And if you're a nationalist, you're not all going to live together in the world in peace, and it's not going to be a people of the world unite and revolt against the bad. It has to happen in each nation among the people who live there to do that in their own nation. It can't happen on a world basis unless it's communism, which is supposedly no longer a popular idea at all. But let's go back now to the goal, to the objective of these men in these sites, books, and programs. Their objective is not to rock the boat. They appear to be rocking the boat. They want you to believe they are really courageous. They're truth tellers. They're out there risking their lives, you know, to bring you the truth. But in reality, they're holding things steady. They're holding things in place. Don't be fooled. To demonstrate how and why I've come to these conclusions, I'm going to look at these men one by one. It's going to take me longer than this program, as I said, but I have something very specific I want to point out to you. And that is something that you can see in several places on the internet. This is an example of what I'm talking about. It's a commemorative medal from 1933 with a swastika on one side and a Star of David on the other. This commemorative, quote, coin, unquote, is used by both Daryl Smith and Gordon Duff as having some meaning for a National Socialist Israel Major Alliance at that time. Gordon Duff has it pictured on his December 22nd, 2010 blog post titled, Making the World Fear and Hate Jews is a Dreadfully Wrong Policy. I'm going to be referring to this particular article of his in a moment after I talk about this medal. He has it pictured there, as I said, both sides, and underneath the picture he's put the words, a partnership with the question mark. And I do believe that Duff has talked about this, calling it a coin, but in this article as it stands now, he doesn't talk about it in it. He just has the picture there with the words, a partnership, underneath it. Now, Daryl Bradford Smith, and I want to say that I don't think that Bradford is Daryl Smith's given name. I think he just added that to his name at some point to give himself a more classy name. Because his brother is Scott Smith, and his brother has been around for a while and on programs and so on, and he's talked about Daryl. Again, I'm depending on my memory, but I remember him saying that one time some years back that Bradford was just the name that Daryl obviously just came up with. So I'm going to call him Daryl Smith, and it's shorter too. But Daryl said on one of his radio broadcasts on January 12, 2011, so that was just like a couple of weeks ago, he said one piece of evidence that, I'm quoting, one piece of evidence that they used is that they used Hitler to bring people to Palestine. In fact, as I've said, there were silver coins minted with the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other. And then he said they were flying the Nazi flag on the stern of the ship. We can go on and on with this, unquote. So Smith talked about these coins, he calls them silver coins, on several programs, but I'm not going to quote all of those. But both of these men are using this to put forth the idea that this coin was minted by the Hitler government as a symbol of Nazi Zionist cooperation in building Israel. Now, you can find it on various internet sites, and you'll see it described as a coin commemorating the Havara Agreement, otherwise known as the Transfer Agreement, which, according to the information that's given, is brought 60,000 Jews, along with their wealth, to Palestine between the years 1931 and 1942, or whatever, when they stopped doing that. You know, over a long period of time, 60,000, that's all. And they also were able to take all their wealth, or most of their wealth, with them. In some cases, all. So this is presented as being a coin minted to commemorate that. Now, and another thing that's given wrong on the internet in some places is that people try to figure out what it says on these coins, and they've got it wrong. On this one, it says Palestina Ein Nazi Furtnach, and the Furtnach is one word, but it's actually two words, and so you can't find that word. And the on the other side, they have it Undersalt Davonim Angriff. Undersalt is misspelled, and then Davonim is actually two words, Davonim Angriff. So it's hard to figure out what it says if you look it up. And it's misunderstood, and this is, nobody tries to correct this. But you will find it corrected, the correct story about this, on, well, I'm going to tell you where it is so you can look it up. HTTP random pottins, randompottins.blogspot.com/2007/05/coin-with-2-sides.html. And on here, we get the true translation of these words and what it really says on this coin, which is not a coin, it's a medal, and it's not silver. It's 1.5 inches in diameter, which is more like the size of a medal, small medal. They were made of bronze, not silver, and some of them had a silver color coating on them. And what it says on the ones on the side with the Star of David is, a Nazi travels to Palestine. And on the other side, it says, and tells about it in the Angriff. The Angriff was a newspaper. And so it's about a newspaper story. It's something done to publicize some stories in a newspaper. Now, I'll go on and explain this further. And in this, on this site that I just gave you the URL for, it tells us that there was a Baron Leopold Itz von Mittelstein, who was a member of the Nazi Party, and he was a an SS official. And he was, as soon as Hitler came into power in 1933, this is in January 33, he was kind of in charge of a certain project for what to do with the Jews. You know, nothing had been decided yet. It was like, well, you know, how is it best to go about carrying out the policy that the Third Reich had of removing as many Jews as possible from controlling positions in government and in the German economy, and also even removing them from the country. So the Zionists at that time, they decided that this was a good opportunity to work with the new regime and remove Jews to Palestine. And so they, this one fellow, Kurt Tuchler, who was a high official in the, among the Zionists, approached von Mildenstein to write something favorable about Zionism and its project in Palestine. So this von Mildenstein, Mildenstein, said that he needed to go there first before he could write anything. He wasn't going to write about something he didn't know just to help the Zionists. So he got permission from the government to travel on an official trip with this Kurt Tuchler, and the two of them went, just the two of them, along with their wives. So a little party of four, these two guys and their wives, went to Palestine, and von Mildenstein was shown all around, and he was very impressed, and he actually spent 6 months there, and he saw a lot of things that he thought was could be really a good place for the Jews to go. And he liked the fact that the idea was that the Jews were going to settle on the land, and it fit in with the Nazi notions about blood and soil, and they were going to become farmers and simple producers and so on. And he did. He just didn't see the problem for the Palestinian population. Maybe he didn't want to, because it was such a nice solution for the National Socialists and ridding Germany of the Jews. So while he was there and writing these articles, they were published in Der Angriff newspaper, which was the Nazi Party newspaper, and Goebbels was the head person there. 12 of these articles were published, and so they had this medal made up to advertise these articles. And this was before the transfer agreement was ever decided upon or officially set up. So, and this is just one little example of how you are misled by these people to believe things that are not really the way they were, and to see things in a way that, like, to see this great alliance between Hitler and the Zionists, and which end up making Hitler into a Zionist. And they use this to say, well, see, but here already they were he was doing this. See, I'm going to bring up some more examples like that, but I won't go into so much detail. It's almost time for me to take a break already. So I will just bring up also that in the same sentence, of course, he talks about the Nazi flag on the ship that took the Jews to Palestine and so on. Well, he also says that the Star of David flag was the only flag that was allowed to fly in Germany under the Third Reich. And there was a swastika flag was allowed, and the blue and white flag of Zionism. And that's true, but that is because the reason for this is simple. The Jews were not considered part of the German nation once Hitler came into power. They were given protected minority status so that they would not be harmed, because they were, and they were allowed to have their own separate Jewish life. This is what was encouraged, because they were trying to dislodge them from participating fully in German national life, and eventually laws were passed which prevented this. So in order to be fair, they said, you know, you are Jews within our German nation, and you are not Germans, and we respect you, but we do not include you. Therefore, you can have your own lifestyle, you know, amongst yourselves, and you can fly your flag and so on. This was not because the Third Reich was, felt that the Zionist flag was equal to their own. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take our break now. Stay with me for something very interesting coming up.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
You characterize sanctions imposed on your country as illegal. Is there any proof of that? Based on the four pieces of evidence announced in Vienna, I maintain that the reason they imposed international sanctions on us is illegal. I ask international lawyers to correct me if I'm wrong, because in proof number one, the imposed sanctions do not comply with clause 12C of the IAEA's charter. International inspectors have visited the reactors. They have documentation and samples of the tests. If they found inconsistencies, they would have sent a report to the agency's director. The agency director would have presented the report to the IAEA's management team, which would have presented the report to the Security Council. That never took place in Iran. In 2003, we discussed these issues with the IAEA director and inspectors, and none of them said there were any inconsistencies. More inspections were performed, but three European states, France, the UK, and Germany, with the assistance of the USA, put pressure on the IAEA, and report was given to the Security Council. That's out of accord with the decision of the IAEA and its charter. Secondly, a report is presented to the IAEA management team in case there is evidence of changing of the nuclear program work for military purposes. But in reports presented by the agency over the past 8 years, there was always a phrase stating that no proof of the Iran nuclear program pursuing military aims has been detected. And I appeal to the esteemed viewers to read the reports on the IAEA's website on the internet. Iran does not violate any laws, and reports should not be presented to the IAEA management team. Thirdly, if a state does not let inspectors onto its territory and the reactor's territory or interferes with their work, the issue is viewed by the Security Council like it was with North Korea. But it's a different situation with Iran. In Iran, inspectors did their job and the agency's director confirmed this, but they were not truthful. And lastly, on the decision of sanctions prepared by three countries before it was sent to the UN, there was a very important phrase. The discontinuation of uranium enrichment is voluntarily and not obligatory by law. This phrase appeared in the decree under pressure from the countries which did not join it. So how can they say that we're going against the law, though we stopped uranium enrichment at the Isfahan reactor, but they want us to stop the nuclear research? There were many reports about a virus found in the reactors in Bushehr and Natanz. How could it get into the computer system of Iran's reactors? How did you fix it? And who did you blame?
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I am talking about disinformation on the Internet. And I have mentioned quite a few names. I've discussed how we can recognize disinformation. But even so, I'm going to continue to discuss some examples now. Getting back to Gordon Duff, and I'm going to be talking today, I'm going to be doing my talking about Duff and Smith, even though they're not at the top of my list, because they fit in. They're the two that, in a sense, that almost bug me the most. So I'm glad I'm going into them early on here. So this article that I mentioned by Duff in December 22nd, Making the World Fear and Hate Jews is a Dreadfully Wrong Policy. I'm going to, where he has this picture of the so-called coin on it, but he doesn't refer to it, to the coin. I'm going to quote some things and comment a little bit on a few things I've quoted, which is to point out what he's saying that is either misinformation or disinformation. First, he says, in 1940, Adolf Hitler was the most popular man in America. Now, right there, in 1940, Adolf Hitler was not the most popular man in America. He was never the most popular man in America. You know, what is he trying to say? He doesn't explain it. He never says why he says something. He just says it. And now this article had 80 comments, and I'll bet most of them were positive and said, oh, great, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Because people just take what he says and think he's somehow brilliant. Now, if he says this, he must know something that they don't know. Gee, I didn't know he was the most popular man in America. And they read on to see, you know, what else they can learn. So, following that sentence, he says, his, meaning Hitler, his hatred of Jews was seen as one of the best characteristics, one of his best characteristics. Now, his hatred of Jews was never seen as one of his best characteristics. There's more nonsense. Then he continues, Hitler had accused Jews of financial attacks on Germany, of building world communism. Well, true, okay. Then he says his proof was a few documents, unclear as to origin, and yet most of the world chose to follow him. Well, the proof of the Jewish financial attacks on Germany and of building world communism is not a few documents, unclear as to origin. That is very clear, very well documented. I suppose you could go on for days talking about the evidence for that. And then he says, though it was not clear, most of the world chose to follow him. No, most of the world did not choose to follow Hitler. They didn't. Again, he's making these false statements. And then he tries to, and then he says, today, right following that, see, here's how he connects it with just in your mind, implication. Today, Israel, under its current leadership, spits in the face of nearly every nation. Its academic leaders threaten Western Europe with nuclear attack. Its religious leaders speak of American troops as donkeys to be sacrificed. No accusation made against Iran comes close to the things Israel publicly announces about itself. Well, what he's doing in that statement, which says absolutely nothing, but it seems to a lot of people that, oh, it's, yeah, great, anti-Israel, is that he is connecting Adolf Hitler's behavior that people followed and approved of, which is not true, and with Israel's behavior, which he's saying that so many people follow and approve of. You see, he's making a false connection with false statements. But how many people will call him on that besides me? I would like to know if someone does. Now, my next quote from this article. Duff writes, fomenting hatred for the Jewish people for financial gain, for political gain, spreading fear, all part of a childishly obvious globalist ploy, is insane. Now, this is very clever. What he's doing here is connecting Hitler as a globalist, because hatred for the Jewish people is being fomented by globalists. It's a globalist ploy. He says it's part of a globalist ploy, and since we already know that Hitler fomented hatred for the German people, for the Jewish people, I mean, pardon me, for the Jewish people, therefore Hitler is a globalist, because fomenting hatred for Jews is a globalist ploy. That fits with the same kind of thing that he did in the first quote. Now, this next quote I have, Nazi, he starts out saying Nazi Zionists, and then a colon. One of the hidden undersides of Hitler's policies toward the Jews was his alliance with Zionists. And then he goes on and calling Israel a Hitler-esque, the Hitler-esque Greater Israel plan and so on. Well, you see, he's connecting, once again, Hitler with the Zionists. This is his whole thing, is being anti-Zionist and anti-Hitler and putting them together. And there's a method, there's a reason for all of this. Then he says that we know that the Hitler-esque Greater Israel plan Things are well within known history. Things that are well within known history are sometimes pushed aside. One of those things is the strange relationship between Zionists and Hitler. Now he's finally coming out with what he was getting at. A relationship even a revisionist has to admit had unpleasant consequences. Well, he considers himself a revisionist. That's for another time. I can't get into that today. So he is saying that within known history, we know that there was a relationship between Zionists and Hitler. Well, there was a short relationship with the with transferring Jews out of Germany into Palestine. That's the only relationship. Well, there may have been another with the trucks, you know, trading Jews for German prisoners, and trading Jews for trucks and so on. So those are some relationships. But he's talking about a much larger relationship. Now, then he quotes from Leni Brenner, who is a Jew, and something that he wrote, saying that under Hitler, Zionists were to control Jewish life in Germany, eventually settling Jews in Palestine in a pro-German Nazi state. Israel is going to be a Nazi state from the beginning. It was Hitler's plan to make a pro-German Nazi state in Palestine. And he says, Zionist Palestine, allied with Hitler, was meant to offset British and German influence in the Middle East. Now, this is interesting because what he's implying here is that the Zionists allied with Hitler, again, he's putting the two together, was meant to offset British and German influence in the Middle East, which is he is separating Hitler from all that is German, from Germans. Hitler was not interested in the Germans. Hitler was not there to help the Germans. Hitler was allied with the Zionists against the Germans. This is what he means by this. And he continues in that sentence, a policy almost identical with the American Middle East strategy a generation later. So now, here now he's tying the Zionists and Hitler with the American Middle East strategy. That is, the United States and its leadership today, and that is a part of what he says that people think is so brilliant and so wonderful. Oh, America is led by Nazis, and they are the same as Hitler, and the Zionists are in on that. So you have Zionists, Hitler, Americans, the American government, the American military, the American everything, all allied together in one picture. What is the purpose of this? He also then talks about Israel having a truly Hitler-esque aspect. So it's no secret what he's doing, but it depends on if you think it's good or if you see something, if you can see more deeply into what he's trying to do. He says at the end, which is gives it away, all right? It makes it clear. The clear note here, he says, of course, Zionism isn't Jews. And opposing Zionist policies should have nothing to do with labeling anyone, race, religion, ethnicity, not damning them or their children. Well, as we know, Duff is one-quarter Jewish. That's what he told me. He is one-quarter Jewish, he's one-quarter Polish, one-quarter German, and one-quarter Scottish. This is what he wrote to me. So I assume that's what he stands on. Though likes to portray himself as a German. He's always saying, this German boy, I'm a German boy, and all that stuff. But he is saying that Zionism isn't Jews. This is the whole point. This is Alan Hart's point. This is the point of a lot of these people. Not all of them, but most of them. Zionism isn't Jews. Zionism is Hitler. Zionism is white people. Zionism is Europeans. Zionism is all the European nations that are still controlling the world today, and this has to be brought down, and as I said earlier, all the people of the world must unite. So now he is making it appear in a plausible way that because he's part Jewish, he fears for the Jews, and the Jews should not be blamed for Zionism or for what the Zionists are doing. Okay. But to say Zionism isn't Jews is completely mistaken, and yet a lot of others are pushing that. So are you going to buy it? That's it. You know, are people going to buy it because they hear it portrayed in this way, or are they not? Now, let me go on to Duff on the Kevin Barrett program. on January 15th, because he made some statements there that were absolutely false once again. He is saying things. He is either ignorant of what he's saying, or he is just shooting from the hip. He's hoping that he just has to say something. It sounds good to him. I'm not sure, because I don't know the purpose of these things that he's saying. But the fact is, he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he's talking anyway. You see? So, and of course, Kevin Barrett didn't correct him, because Kevin doesn't know. And that's what Gordon Duff counts on. He counts on people not knowing that what he is saying is false. So he said that he had visited Buchenwald. See, he's presenting himself as a revisionist now. He visited Buchenwald, and he said that Buchenwald was liberated by the Russians, that the crematorium there was a huge building, and a couple of movies were filmed there in which, people were running in and out of all the rooms there with, you know, guns chasing each other and so on. And that this crematorium was totally destroyed and rebuilt by the Russians. Now, all of this is wrong. Not a word of that is true. Buchenwald was liberated by the Americans. The crematorium there is the original building with some reconstruction done, but, you know, basically the same building. It's not huge. It's pretty small, and there was no movies made there that anybody can remember or think of. So why is he saying these things? You know, nobody asked him. He volunteered this information. Okay, let's go on. He said two more false things. He said that he took time to read all of Hitler's diaries, and he learned so much about Hitler. That's why he knows so much now. But, you know, there are no Hitler diaries. There are no Hitler diaries, so he couldn't have read all of Hitler's diaries. So what's he talking about? He's talking about reading some things that he wants to call Hitler's diaries. He also said that the 6 million number for the Jewish dead did not come from the Jews, but from the Russians. But, you know, he's wrong there. It did come from the Jews. It didn't come from the Russians. The Russians had a larger number at first, but at Nuremberg, it was finally decided that the number would be 6 million. In Nuremberg, Nuremberg tribunals came several months, quite a few months later, and also, it was run by Jews, and so this Jewish 6 million number began in the 1890s, if not earlier. It was shown all the way through World War I, where the Jews were claiming in newspaper articles all over the place that there were 6 million Jews about to die, 6 million Jews in jeopardy, 6 million Jews starving, on and on, and in between and during World War II. It was always 6 million, and that's the number that the Jews insist on, but he wants to cover that up and say that it wasn't the Jews. Now, to go on with Daryl Bradford Smith now, or Daryl Smith. Daryl Smith runs the website imthewitness.com. He has a very elaborate website. At the top of his French Connection front page, there's a big disclaimer telling you, basically, that he is in agreement with internationalist goals. Yes, because the only thing that differentiates him from internationalist goals and internationalist liberals is that he says he is anti-Zionist. Otherwise, everything is he's anti-racist, anti-Nazi, anti-fascist, and he has recently added that all, quote, new groups, quote, whatever that means, of Nazis, fascists, and racists are government psyops. Now, why has he added that? And I'm going to suggest in a moment why he's added that. He's also very recently stuck up there in a very sloppy way, showing he must have just done it himself. And I don't think he's the webmaster, because I don't think he knows how to do it. He stuck up there in bright pink letters, I am who I say I am. I am one of the people. Now, why does he have to affirm that? Again, I'm going to talk about that, because he's seeing that he's coming under attack again. Now, I do want to point out that first, before I go into that on his website, he has all this good stuff. Everybody says, oh, what good stuff he has on his website. Well, that is always the case. It attracts you. It attracts people and says, look at, he may say some things that we don't like, but look at all the good stuff he has on his website. Well, that's part of disinfo. You know, you have to draw the people to you. Now, he has five articles that are about this, Hitler was a Zionist, Hitler was a Rothschild, etc. Number one, on his website, amongst all the great stuff, he has Jewish financing of the Nazi Party. He has on the Jewish funding, control, and leadership of the Third Reich. These are all articles or books that you can read there. He has how Bush's grandfather helped Hitler rise to power. Now, this is a long article that was in The Guardian, and I'm going to go into detail on this when I am a guest on Deanna Spingola's radio program on February 15th. So I don't have to do that now because all this takes up so much time. But that's the subject I'm going to be talking about then, which is, again, that Bush-Nazi connection, so-called. Number four, did Hitler work with the Jews? Number five, there's a video showing a Greek Orthodox Christian bishop talking about how Hitler was an instrument of the Zionist Jews. And then there's a couple other things that are along that line that I'm not going to go into now. Now, I do want, because I want to talk to you about a new program that he did on Sunday, January 16th, with Muhammad Rafiq, one of his very frequent guests. And I mentioned that already. But on this, he said a lot of very strange things. And before that, he had programs which he said some, which he said a lot of things which I know are untrue. And so I wrote on the Michael Collins Piper program page on his new podcast, Rez's new podcast, I talked about some of these things, and I also wrote there that on my January 31st program, I was going to address this broadcast by Daryl Smith, and I'm sure that Daryl Smith is reading all that, and he knows that, and so he has added these things to his webpage about he's who he says he is, and all these people are an agent of some kind. Because he's probably an agent, and so he's, you know, accusing other people of being an agent. Now, I can't go into all of this, but I will say that on this program, he took off into attacking Hitler, and he said, this is what I think is a response to what I wrote. He says, I believe 100% he was working for the Zionist Jews. His job was to create disaster in Germany and destroy the last strong Christian country in the world. Now, a lot of people go along with this, my friends. But he also, then he said, the Zionists got what they wanted. This is supposedly how you prove that Hitler was one of them, because the Zionists won, and therefore they couldn't have won unless Hitler was in their camp from the beginning, which doesn't make much sense. Then he says, anybody who falls on the other side of that is a shill, in my view, and they are not telling the truth. Now, he's saying that because of what I and other people have been saying about him. I have never called him a shill, but other people have called him a shill. You can hear this on, go to his website. It's a Sunday, January 16th radio program. Now, here's what he says further, and I'm gonna analyze this. He says, my synopsis, Adolf Hitler worked with Schroeder's Bank, and Schroeder's Bank was the liaison in London. Hess was Jewish. His doctor was Jewish. His sister was working for Jewish agencies. His general staff had Jews everywhere, all over it. His finance minister was Jewish. I.B. Farben, he calls it I.B. Farben, was financed by Jews. Then he brings up Ford Motor Company, DuPont, IBM. He says, IBM is all over the Nazi Party, whatever that means. And this is the way he talks. And he says, anyone who's on the other side of that is a shill, in my opinion. Now, number one, all of these things he said are absolutely false. There's not a shred of truth in any of these charges that he goes over so quickly and so superficially and never goes back and goes into any detail about how he knows this is true. The Schroeder Bank, he says it was involved with London banking. Actually, there is a Baron Kurt von Schroeder who was born the same year Hitler was, and he was served in World War I on the general staff. He joined a banking firm in Cologne after the war. In 1928, he joined the German People's Party. Then he got involved with Hitler's party, and he was a supporter. And he sounds like a great guy. You know, he was totally German. He never went to London. The truth, here's the thing. Here's what you find out. If you want to study it, According to Anthony Sutton, an earlier member of the family moved to London, changed his name to Schroeder without the E or without the umlaut, and organized the banking firm of J. Henry Schroeder in London and J. Henry Schroeder Banking Corporation in New York. So he is confusing these two people and saying that the one is the other. And they are two different people, and the one that was associated with Hitler was in no part of, he was just working for a bank, and he was actually arrested after the war and tried and imprisoned because he was a party member. Okay, number two, he says his deputy was Jewish. This idea that Rudolf Hess was Jewish, this is so far-fetched that I can't even find anything on it on the internet. I haven't yet to find anything. I'm sure there's stuff there. I've seen it. I have seen it somewhere, but it's hard to find. I mean, this is totally, where does this idea come from? It's made up. He says his doctor was Jewish. You know, Hitler had physicians. He had Dr. Karl Brandt. He had Dr. Theodor Morell. He had Dr. Ludwig Stumpfeger. None of these people were Jews. The Jewish doctor was his mother's doctor or the family doctor when he was a child in Linz, Dr. Edward Bloch. And he treated Adolf for a lung ailment in 1904 when Hitler was 15, and he was his mother's treated his mother for cancer until she died in 1907, and that was the end of that. I mean, so to say that his doctor was Jewish is just stupid. Then to say his sister Angela worked for a Jewish agency, well, I found this on Wikipedia, and there is no source for it, none. It's just a statement given, but nobody knows where that came from. Now, she may have been employed at a Jewish academy after World War I because the Jews were taking over everything and the Germans were having to be employed by the Jews if they wanted to get a job. But she didn't remain there. And later, when she became a housekeeper for Adolf at his estate at the Berghof. So that's another thing that it's made into something that it isn't. Hitler general staff was full of Jews. Not a single Jew in the general staff. Not a single Jew. He doesn't even know what the general staff is. Now, number six, finance minister was Jewish. No, Hallmar Schacht was a Prussian, not a Jew. Walther Funk was the next one. He was not a Jew. Gottfried Feder was an important National Socialist economy. He was not a Jew. There was no Jew that as finance minister. And then I.B. Farben, financed by the Jews. There, I can go on with that. I've run out of time. But that is not something that you can show either. It's not. It was a German company, and I don't know of any Jews in it. If there were some Jews, well, there were Jews spotted around here and there. So that's 7 out of 7 that is totally wrong of what Daryl Smith says on his radio program. 7 out of 7 totally wrong. This is the record of people like Daryl Smith and Gordon Duff. If you know anything, if you don't know any better, you will believe what they say. But I'm telling you, don't believe them. Ladies and gentlemen, next week I will be back to talk about the rest of the people on my list. I hope you will enjoy. Join me then. Thank you very much for listening. This is Carolyn Yeager. Good night.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.